I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo here with Sam Monson and special guest Austin Gale of PFF Tailgate, of the Tailgate Show.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, man.
Dude, appreciate it, man. I've listened to that intro from you a ton, and it's great to hear it in person. I love it. It's very loud, rambunctious.
Nobody gets sick of it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to yell, and then it comes across
no,
as normal.
No, it's good. Like I said, I'm a huge fan.
That's how you're supposed to do it. And you got to keep the energy up the whole show. Keep the energy up, Austin.
I'll try.
And slow down so the people can understand you.
That's good feedback.
And how you doing, Sam?
Good. How about you?
Yeah, great.
Excellent.
Great. We got a special guest here today.
We do.
Yeah.
And it's Austin.
Yeah. It was going to be Renner, but he's on vacation.
It's true.
Let's be serious.
Then it was going to be Trev.
Runner up.
He's not here either.
Yeah.
And that's Austin.
Oh, I was third? I wasn't even second?
Don't tell him.
I was third.
Just between us. It's just between us. But we're previewing the draft today. So we did this last year, kind of like this draft kickoff overview, strengths and weaknesses of the draft, players to know, the top storylines. We'll go through all of that here today. But first, Sam, you want to talk about the little charity drive that we got going on here?
Yeah. What are you up to? Are you gaining ground? Are you still lagging behind? Where are you?
A wise man once said, if you count the pennies, you know, the dollars add up or something like
how
that.
How many pennies?
I've heard that.
I am not counting the pennies. I will not fall into the trap of our former fearless leader.
Okay.
So I'm behind. So I don't want to see.
Still leader in my heart.
We're up to $836 for the for the Sunshine Kids.
Wow. That's
120?
That's like 4X.
Oh. Oh, Tyler.
Maybe it's my poorly cropped Hope is Here logo that I couldn't fix.
Who made your graphic for your... That looks terrible.
I need help. I know. I couldn't crop it. Yours is better.
Steve.
Way better. It's not even close. It's like four times better.
Could you loan me...
somebody? Just reach out. Reach out. I can make some plays.
Steve and MS Paint did his logo. That's
go back to Steve's logo if we can on the YouTube,
I was
going to
get help from Harry, who's a little... better in MS Paint than
that. Is horrendous.
Yeah,
that is horrendous.
I couldn't crop it because there's no top. It's a long story.
Hope is here for what? What? I don't even know what it's for.
Okay, we need a better graphic. A better graphic's going to help us come back here. Either way.
Anything.
Sam's raising money for Sunshine Kids. I'm raising money for Heritage House. It's a battle. First person to win has to do the forfeit/dare is what somebody emailed and said. That would be your U.S. equivalent. Dare.
Still not quite the same thing, I don't think.
I mean, forfeit's not one-to-one either. But you're going Jackson Mahomes TikTok. I'm going combine drills.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to see.
What's your favorite?
I think the Jackson Mahomes thing, obviously, like seeing you dance in any way, shape, or form is funny.
I think sway the people.
Yeah. I mean, I think doing the combine drills is like you could do that for fun regardless, right? That's my kind of reaction to it. I think that me and Mike might do the combine drills just for fun.
Oh. Okay.
So, like, you are not ever going to do the Jackson Mahomes dance for fun. It's charity-driven.
That's a fair point.
Very true.
Your effort's more like, yeah, I feel like you mailed it in. You mailed it in on the graphic. You mailed it in on what you were going to do. I mean, the numbers back that up.
And he was late.
And
you didn't even get it done on time.
Oh, you didn't even get it done on time. You're getting on me for being late to the show. We missed a 3 o'clock meeting yesterday. And you texted me at 4:30. You texted me at 4:30. Like, yeah, I missed the 3 o'clock meeting. No, I know that.
Now that you're right. I shouldn't have criticized you for making us late for the second straight day here live on the PFF NFL podcast, because I've been late before as well.
We've obviously all been
late. So anyway, go check it out. So Sam's got his pinned tweet at PFF_Sam. You can donate to him. I'm at PFF_Steve. Pinned tweets and go help me come back. We need a comeback here,
dude. I think
Mom,
honestly,
Dad. Can you guys help out, please?
It has to be a Steve-driven effort, in my opinion, right? Like, I think it has to be a change in the graphic and potentially even a shift in what the result, like, what the charity result will be. Like, that's the only thing that's going to really bring this comeback.
You think I should pivot?
We do have alternative suggestions.
Pivot to the Soul Glow?
I don't think it should be. I think I saw some people saying you should shave your head. Like, I know that's like
I'm not shaving my head.
Yeah, that's a part of your core, right? Like, I'm not like, that's ridiculous.
We've already put a price tag on that.
Dying it, though, like red. I don't know.
Dyeing it red?
Dyeing it red.
We've already put a $50,000 price tag on shaving my head.
Can you imagine
that's...
a red version of
I
that?
Know it would be fucked, but I mean, it would be funny.
Oh, yeah. There's a pretty good chance that this show is
I'll tell you right
gonna,
now, I'll donate
we're
if you,
try
if
not
you
to
change it.
On this
to,
so we do less cussing
okay.
than other shows.
So I was going to say, there's a pretty good chance this show becomes more, you know,
I can reel it
X or R.
I can reel it in. I can reel it in.
So warning.
No, you can't. We've already well established you're not capable of reeling it in.
It's so try to control yourself.
There was also the other suggestions were Steve could recreate a Bob Ross segment, you know,
ooh.
Pick out the fro and
you know who Bob Ross is.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
It's infinitely funnier than the combine.
Just
girls.
Say it,
right.
Just say in Austin. As the trivia champs, I just don't know how much you know.
No, I know. That's true.
I repurposed our MVP belt, of which you won. Look at the 2017 champion.
Wow.
I repurposed it to make us
it looks
trivia
sick.
Champs.
It yeah. looks sick.
Look at that. Got to know where the hard camera is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the trivia champs here because we beat you, Austin. So I don't know if you knew who Bob Ross was.
I do know who Bob Ross is.
So do you think we should pivot?
This is thing. I'm doing fine.
My thought is, it's like, okay, the numbers, the data are telling you an obvious story.
You know who else was doing fine? The Falcons. Yeah, they were up 28-3.
Yeah.
They were doing fine.
There is no sign of that comeback in you, though, right now, without changes to the graphic and without changes to, like, the charity result.
All right.
In my opinion.
I'm going to talk to your people, see if we can get some help.
Well, we can make some plays here. I'm happy to help.
Anyway, that's our intro. So appreciate everybody for being a part of that. Want to get into some draft talk?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Austin, you've been doing this for a while. Tell everybody about Tailgate, because we got millions and millions of listeners here. And, you know, we can throw some your way.
Absolutely.
What are you guys doing over at Tailgate?
Yeah, right, Tailgate. Check out the podcast, Tailgates, with me and Mike Renner, PFF's lead draft analyst. And a lot of it is NFL draft, right? That's where, Mike spends 90% of his time. I think the other 10% is not working, actually. But I think it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun on that podcast and talk a lot of things NFL draft. We also talk college football, NFL. It's a big reason why we were formerly 2-for-1 drafts, where we really locked into the NFL draft, but now covering more things college football, NFL. And right now, going through our combine preview series and talking a lot about the offseason and free agency and stuff like that. It's fun. Definitely check it out. 3 episodes a week.
Awesome. Great. Well, let's get into the draft component here. And again, we want just kind of like a high level overview. Of course, we're always going to start with the QBs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's the story every year, but we're 1 year removed from 5 quarterbacks going in the first round. This year, does anybody have any clue? I purposely try not to listen to the Kuipers and McShays and Daniel Jeremiah's of the world, just not to get swayed. But what are they saying at this? Like, how many QBs are going in the first round? Is there any consensus number one QB right now?
I don't think there is a consensus number one QB right now. I think if you had to put a consensus, it would be Malik Willis. Now, it's not a literal consensus because we don't have Malik Willis as QB1, but I think that is probably what is going to drive a lot of this. I think Malik Willis will go ultimately inside the top 10. I think Chad Ryder of NFL.com had the Panthers trading up from 6 to 3 for Malik Willis. Now, that is a bit rich for me. I don't think Malik Willis is even a top 10 player. I would not take him in the top 10, but I think he does, right? He gets this bump because he has this ceiling level of tools. And the concern I have, and the reason I'm not buying in completely into Malik Willis as this top 10 player, is that everyone wants to tag him as this Josh Allen developmental curve, right? Like, by the time he's in his third year, we'll find it from him. But this is a little bit different than Josh Allen's arc, right? Like, he came out as a true junior from Wyoming and like developed a little bit there, but was not receiving the best of coaching. He Malik Willis transferred from Auburn. There were people already giving up on his development, and we haven't seen like him get significantly better on the things that you need to do to play quarterback over the course of his Liberty career. And now a lot of that is because of the offensive line he played behind. He was not given the best supporting cast. I get it. But when are we actually going to see it from Malik Willis? He's significantly older than what we've seen. And that's why when we compare him to PFF's quarterback one in this class right now is Sam Howell of UNC. He's the only true junior of these guys. We haven't seen his Kenny Pickett year, right? Like, Kenny Pickett had this outstanding year for Pittsburgh in a year that we literally haven't seen for Sam Howell, like in terms of his development, in terms of his age. I do think that you're buying into Sam Howell, what he can be, more than you are some of these other guys, because there's more reason to believe there's time for him to develop, right? We saw outstanding play, projected number one overall pick play from him when he had De'Ami Brown, when he had Daz Newsome, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams. Then, and that was one type of offense, a very vertical offense. He threw like exclusively deep balls, all that stuff. Howard serve an arm. Then Mac Brown says, we're going to run a completely different offense because we don't have any of these guys. It's going to be QB run heavy. and RPO heavy, and like it was a shell of what Sam Howell could be, but still he grades well, still he has success. So
he's running like a fullback. It didn't make any
sense. Exactly. He's the same size as Malik Willis, 6'2", 220, and like he broke as many missed tackles, broke as many tackles as Malik Willis. I think he ranked number one in forced missed tackles among quarterbacks in the Power Five. And now he's not going to run like Malik Willis. He's not running like 4.5s, but like still, I think there's a lot more. You know, everyone talks about this class of traits. Like Desmond Ridder has some traits that I like. You know, Malik Willis obviously has these traits, but Sam Howell does too. And I'm excited to see his senior year, which will be in the NFL, which will be ideally with a better supporting cast.
Interesting perspective there.
But the reason we're talking about traits and all these things of all these guys is that the year for these quarterbacks never materialized. Mm-hmm. Like you rewind a year ago, and teams like the Eagles are kind of punting on the draft class last season and kicking it to this year. And nobody was like, that's just immediately stupid because next year's draft class of quarterbacks is going to be terrible. It's an awful thing to be getting rid of these guys. It was like, all right, well, let's see how these guys go. Like, we were thinking Spencer Rattler was potentially like an elite number one overall pick. The dude doesn't even make the season at his own team. Sam Howell didn't develop. Malik Willis didn't take the step forward. Like, all of these guys that were supposedly of the elite quarterback group this year, none of them got better last year. What the hell happened?
Well, I think my favorite excuse of them, who all have excuses, is Sam Howell's. And that, like, he literally lost four NFL players in that offense. And, like objectively lost four NFL players, and the offensive line wasn't good the year prior, and it wasn't good this year. So there are a lot of excuses, and I think there's a difference between excuses and reasons. I think it was that's the reason Sam Howell did not have the stellar success that you expected. A lot was put on his shoulders at UNC. From Malik Willis, I don't know. Like, when is he going to, you know, turn the page here? When is he going to do, you know, not have these terrible interceptions on tape, right? There are not as many of those on Sam Howell's tape. Now, does he have the high-end traits that Malik Willis does? No. Malik Willis is one of one, a very rare player, a top 50 player on Bruce Feldman's Freaks list, a guy that could run a 4.5 flat at the combine. That's rare for the quarterback position. And for the other quarterbacks, and I know we haven't discussed these guys a ton, but like Desmond Ridder doesn't have the high-end traits of a Howell and a Malik Willis, but you have seen it materialize him improve over the course of his Cincinnati career. I think for Kenny Pickett, it did, right? Like in his last season at Pittsburgh, where he's been there forever, he had a lot of success and showed off some arm talent. And I think a lot of people are like, wow, if that's what he can be in the NFL, he's this kind of high floor projection. Now, the hand size thing will come up. Will it be as small as people are saying? Who knows? I think the combine will tell. The double jointed thumb, I don't really buy into. If this thing's 8.5 or these things are 8.5, like 8.75, there is literally no historical success of quarterbacks with sub 9-inch hands. So there will be some concern there. He'll be Kenny Two Gloves his entire career. And then the other quarterbacks that we really haven't brought up, Carson Strong, he either makes his money at the combine or loses it with this medical check.
If this knee, right?
Yeah, if this knee comes back bad, he will be off boards. And we've had conversations with Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, former scouts, where like there's certain injuries that take players completely off boards. And people are, how is this guy falling past this team or this team? It's because they're off. Like, if there's a certain injury flag, which I think that could happen with Carson Strong, he will fall down boards significantly. Those medical checks will be important.
And Matt Corral, the guy, is he going unnoticed here? Is he getting overlooked a little bit?
I think
from Ole Miss?
The biggest concern with Matt Corral, from what I'm hearing, from what I see too, is that the offense is probably the most gimmicky of any of these offenses, right? Like runs a lot of RPOs and all that stuff and
open
and
stuff over the middle of the field all day.
And just first read for Matt Corral. And that, like, are you going to just change who he is, or are you going to buy into this college-y offense and change your offense to cater to his skill set? I'm not doing that if I draft him in the top 10. I'm not doing that if I draft him in the top 15.
Nobody's going to run that kind of
offense. Exactly.
Something.
Now, when my guy Lane Kiffin finally gets another opportunity in the NFL, maybe we'll see it. But I haven't seen him coach since I was season ticket holder for the Raiders back in the day.
Big Bruce Gradkowski fan back
Absolutely.
In the day. So This is one of the storylines here is going to be what we talked about last year, like working against Mac Jones, Josh Allen, and Justin Herbert's development, working against the dude who just runs the offense and throws the ball accurately. But now I think it's going to go the other way. Malik Willis legitimately does make Josh Allen-type throws, like 50 yards, on a line, laser beams, on the run type of stuff. And people are going to see that. So if people saw that 5 years ago, they'd be like, oh, that's good. But the last guy I saw do this, you know, Jake Locker or whatever. Like, these guys haven't worked out in a while. But because Josh Allen has worked out, is everybody going to chase that with Malik Willis? So that's, you know, one of these storylines here is, are our teams going to chase Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and even Mahomes, guys with incredible traits who did improve greatly at the NFL level. Are people going to, are teams going to chase that? Now, the guy working against that might be Trey Lance. There's already rumors that the Niners want to keep Jimmy Garoppolo. Whether that's true or not, who knows? I mean, they're probably trying to raise his stock a little bit. But it doesn't sound like the Niners are enamored with Trey Lance's development yet, right? And he's supposed to be the guy that, you know, oh, yeah, year two, you know, he'll mm-hmm. be there. So you can't just look at Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and say, okay, we're going to find that next guy, because those guys are really rare compared to what we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years in the NFL.
And I do buy into the consensus. I've talked to Sam a ton about this. I buy into the consensus opinion. I buy into wisdom of the crowds on these guys. And there's no one you talk to that's like, yeah, number one overall pick type of talent. And like that, in my opinion, is such a red flag when you think about taking one of these guys, any of these guys, your favorite of these quarterbacks inside the top five or inside the top 10.
And the other thing about Josh Allen is that, like, that is almost a unique developmental curve. Mm-hmm. If you are chasing the next Josh Allen, you're just automatically setting yourself up for failure, because that's happened like once where a guy has been that bad for that length of time. And then a switch went on, and all of a sudden he goes from being one of the least accurate quarterbacks in the NFL to one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the mm-hmm. NFL, consistently bad play to consistently elite play. Like, you just don't see that kind of leap from anybody ever.
Yeah.
So if you're out there just saying, oh, well, this guy's got comparable tools to Josh Allen, therefore we're going to see the same kind of jump, it's probably not going to happen.
There's a ton of recency bias, right, in that developmental curve. Like, oh, we just saw it with Josh Allen. Maybe we think it can happen again. And I go as far as to say it's not just unique. I just don't think it's going to happen. Like, I don't think we're going to see another Josh Allen-like developmental curve where he lands in a situation where Brandon Bean completely helps him, right, puts him in a position to actually succeed. Brian Daboll is this young, fiery offensive coordinator that plays to his skill set. You just won't see that again. You won't. Like, Josh Allen's situation, in my opinion, is one of one. Now, in 10, 15 years' time, maybe you do. I just don't think you can bank on that happening. You can't. Like, are you going to have a GM that's going to buy into that? Are you going to have an offensive coordinator that can actually do what Dable's capable of? I just doubt it.
The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on these roster moves we're talking about, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home? Planning to start a family? Nope, already did it. Wondering how to make your money grow? Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. So we had Sam Howell as QB1. I don't like any of these guys.
No. No one likes
you
any of these guys.
You can talk me into Sam Howell. I get it.
No one.
But you mentioned, like, the thing you mentioned is the thing that teams used to use against players, right? He's a true junior, Sam mm-hmm. Howell. They used to want to see seniors.
Yeah.
Right? Because those guys were a little bit more polished, and they did have a success rate that was higher at one point. But it's risky in the NFL if you take a guy and say, well, his senior year is going to be in the NFL when he might have a bad offensive line. Like, are you going to hurt him? And now look at Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence. We're 1 year removed from, they were pretty much consensus 1 and 2. And it's like, oh, I don't know. Are they going to get out of this funk? I mean, that's the other thing that makes this tough is a year ago, we thought that there were 5 slam dunk prospects and only one actually looked good.
Yeah.
Now there's 5 that we don't even think, or 6 that we have question marks about. Where would these guys rank in last year's class? Probably 6th.
Very low.
Through 11 behind last year's class, where only Mac Jones looked good this year.
The only interesting thing about this group, because they're not consensus top 10 picks, right? Maybe mm-hmm. one of them goes in the top 10 just because that's the nature of quarterback play. But usually you have flawed prospects. They go exceptionally early to really bad teams, and they have no shot. Because the point you brought up about Josh Allen is a really good one, that it wasn't just Josh Allen. Like, they built a really good team around him. Buffalo, when they drafted Josh Allen, were not good. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you bring in Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley. Like, they had a group of wide receivers. They hit the offensive line. All of a sudden, it's a totally different team around Josh Allen, which helps him get good. Usually, quarterbacks are drafted by bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
But if these guys are going to go in the teens, in the low, you know, the second half of the first round.
Detroit Lions at 32.
But a lot of teams in the NFL that need quarterbacks are actually pretty good teams, right? Denver needs a quarterback. They are a good roster. Pittsburgh needs a quarterback. They're not a bad roster.
Washington.
New Orleans Saints, right? All of a sudden, the teams that actually have really glaring quarterback needs pick lower in the draft, might have a shot at some of these guys, and all of a sudden – flawed quarterback prospects end up walking into a way better situation than typically they do.
Two things there. One, from Steve's comment, it's like, you know, I don't like any of these guys. And that's why none of them are going in the top 10. And yeah. That's why I'm not taking any of these guys in the top 10. But the risk-reward starts to make sense in the 15 to 32 sure. range, right? Like, what if you do hit on a Malik Willis? Or what if you do hit on a Sam Howell or Matt Corral and what they could be in the NFL? That's worth a selection in the 15 to 32 range with that fifth-year option. And what you said, how many quarterbacks have we talked to, former quarterbacks in the NFL, where they bring up situation. Jordan Palmer, JT O'Sullivan, Zach Robinson. They talk so much about, you know, situation is so important to quarterback development and actually having success in the NFL, that a really good quarterback prospect that could be great with one team could be terrible with another. And I don't disagree with that. I think situation and development and coaching staff and GM buy-in is so much more important than we give it credit for, right? It's not as simple as finding the next Justin Herbert. It's building the next Justin Herbert, right? Like, you have to build a Justin Herbert. You do not draft him. If the Raiders draft him, I'll tell you right now, I'm a Raiders fan, it doesn't pan out. I just don't think it does. Like, they're not going to fit him with the right tools to actually succeed. That offensive line is way behind the curve. You need to get into a situation where you have GMs, coaches all bought in to building up a great situation for a quarterback.
I say I don't like them with the utmost respect, and acknowledging what you said, you're buying into like the consensus over yeah. time, right? My opinion doesn't matter that much in the yeah. grand scheme of things, which is why when I'm sitting here, like, I got a mock draft coming out on Monday.
Let's
and
go.
it's obnoxious trying to slot these guys, because I do get to that, you know, that spot at 15. Do I really want to take him at 12 with the Vikings, you know, and sit him for a year? Do I want to take somebody at you know, in the top 10, or when you're in 15 to 32, or the Lions at 32, like, with all their extra picks, they absolutely should take a quarterback mm-hmm. because you get the fifth year option potential. So there's some strategy involved, even if you don't love a guy, because there's a chance that you're wrong and that this guy is good and the payoff is just incredible. Beyond that, let's go high level with the draft here. What are the strengths and weaknesses of the draft from a position standpoint beyond quarterback?
There's a massive strength at edge. It's yeah. obvious. You know, the first two players in this draft that are drafted could be edge players in Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau, and I'd love to have more conversation around Kayvon Thibodeau on this show. It's something that I think is going to be a very polarizing conversation as the draft progresses and as more people talk to other people in the NFL. But Aiden Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau, cream of the crop. I think I'm confident George Karlaftis is a top 10, top 15 player in this class. I think he's that good and can be that good in the NFL. And then you have other guys that are in this, like, what they could be tier, but still, like, really insane. David Ojabo has been playing football for 4 years.
The other Michigan edge.
And you have also Arnold Ebiketie of Penn State, Kingsley Enagbury of South Carolina, Myjai Sanders of Cincinnati. And the reason this edge class is high-end is because of Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau, David Ojabo. But the reason it's deep is because these guys they meet the size thresholds. Kingsley Enagbury has 35-inch arms. Arnold Ebiketie has 34-inch arms and has the size. There's no one in this class, or no one at the top end of this class, that's like, oh man, can he get to 250? You know, can he get to 245? Boye Mafe is super big coming out of Minnesota. Like, there's a lot of these edge players that meet the size thresholds to be good in the NFL, or that have had previous historical success in the NFL. They didn't bring up, like, Trayvon Walker of Georgia. Like, there's a lot of edge talent in this class, and it's a good class to not only, you know, be drafting at the top, right, to get an Aiden Hutchinson or get a Kayvon Thibodeau, but top of the second round in my latest mock draft. I had a 2-round mock draft. There's like 6 edge guys that go between like 35 and 45, 35 and 50, because they're that good.
We have 12, I think I just counted, in our top 60.
Yeah.
Just edge defenders. And I was playing with the mock draft simulator over at PFF.com earlier today. And when you do get to the top of the second round, it is all edges. And I'm picking with the Jaguars top of the second, and I'm thinking, man, I took Aiden Hutchinson first. Should I have done that? And it, so now the Jaguars at the top, another big story, because there's no consensus number one player, right? There's no consensus top quarterback, and there's no consensus top player, which makes this, you know, a really weird draft, right? Because usually when there's not a top quarterback, oh, well, there's a Bosa, or there's a Myles Garrett, or there's a Chase Young. And those are the top guys. But we don't know if the Jags are taking Aiden Hutchinson or taking Evan Neal at tackle, and they can go any way. But I think the edge depth might dictate where they go at the top. And, you know, maybe I should come around to Evan Neal or the top tackle over there.
I mean, that's why I think that's the way they'll end up going in the end, is they'll default to trying to get some protection for Trevor Lawrence. The fact that they can get talented edge rushers at the top of the second will definitely impact that. It's kind of like, it's the Chase Sewell debate, but a year later in different positions, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just in a vacuum. You always have to bear in mind what you're going to be able to attack with the other position with your next pick. So with the Jags, the three players potentially in the reckoning are two fantastic edges and one tackle. But what is the depth that either of those positions going to be like when you pick again at the top of the second? And what is the sum of those two picks put together? I think that they probably view it as a better bet to grab the tackle.
I agree with that. I do think that ultimately the betting markets are right in swinging towards Evan Neal. I think 3 weeks ago he was plus 900 to go number one overall in DraftKings. He's now plus 150, the favorite to go number one overall. I think it's twofold. One, they want to prioritize building around Trevor Lawrence. They want to prioritize building up that offensive line. And they should, in my opinion, like every team that drafts a young quarterback, throw the kitchen sink, go full Brandon Bean, and develop him by improving his situation. The other piece of it is Evan Neal's good. Evan Neal is going to go to the combine and have like a freaky Tristan Wirfs level combine. What his vert will be, what his broad will be, will change lives. It's going to be that good, and he'll solidify, I think, his status as this pick for the Jags. I think it just there's too much smoke there for not to be fire. Now, I will bang the table a bit, not literally because it hits the mics, but it banged the table for Aiden Hutchinson as the number one overall player in this class, not just because I'm doing the podcast with him, the Hutch podcast, which will release in April 22. That has been fantastic, by the way. I had an hour and a half long
time. Explain what's happening there, by the way.
Podcast is a four-part podcast series where I'm sitting down with Aiden Hutchinson and a lot of others to really just tell his story, and it'll come out before the draft. And the reason PFF is doing it is, you know, there hasn't been this much content or this depth of content on a projected number one overall pick, projected top five player even, ahead of the draft, really ever. Like, you think about Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, these other guys that have come out and been projected number one overall picks. No one's doing 4 hours on them, right? I sat down with his dad for an hour and a half yesterday, talking to his mom later today, talking to his sisters, talking to former coaches, former teammates. And the best thing about it, man, is that I'm getting the same story. The consistency in how people view him off the field has been insane. And it's why I was talking to Bucky Brooks two nights ago. He views Aiden Hutchinson as this high floor, 10 sack a year type of player, not just because he has high end A plus with what he calls them A plus athletic tools and A plus, you know, hands and these things, but because he has A plus off the field. He is a guy that puts his pedal through the floor on every single play and demands excellence from not just himself, but from everyone, right? There's multiple stories where he's asking people, asking coaches, asking teammates to really challenge him. And I think it's really impressive. I do think that Aiden Hutchinson in these interviews between him and Kayvon Thibodeau will separate himself, right? Bucky Brooks calls Kayvon Thibodeau a boom or bust player. Tom McShay comes out of the Senior Bowl, drops him from number one overall to number seven. Daniel Jeremiah has Kayvon Thibodeau going number one in a mock draft a couple weeks ago, now down to eight for the Atlanta Falcons. There, you know, I bring up that phrase a lot, where there's smoke, there's fire. Kayvon Thibodeau's fall is legit in that people are viewing him, teams are viewing him, scouts are viewing him as this boomer bust type, not just because of, you know, maybe some of the concerns that you see on tape, but because he's not a pedal through the metal type of player, right? He's not a guy that they would say is work ethic is the first thing that comes up. And now I'm not trying to diss Kayvon Thibodeau. This is all reports that you're hearing from, you know, credited sources like McShay and Bucky Brooks. But I do think that will be the separator between these two.
I will say, so you mentioned edge is the strength here. I will say from a PFF standpoint, though, the red flags are in the production. There are certain positions where our production grades translate very, very well to the NFL. Mm-hmm. So when you see Hutchinson with a 94.5 grade last year, that is up in Bosa range and Garrett range. And so it's like box checked. Thibodeau's never been above 84. Mm-hmm. That is not box checked. There aren't a lot of players who have become elite at edge. There's few. There's always some. There's not a lot of players who become elite who didn't dominate in college. Like when you look at Carl Aftis from Purdue, pretty good, 87. Trayvon Walker, I mean, he looks like JPP to me, flying around the field mm-hmm. with his size and length and everything that he can do. But why didn't he dominate at Georgia? So to me, from a PFF standpoint, that's at least a fair question. David Ojabo's played, not even 600 snaps
yeah.
in his career. And so there's some development there, but that's a red flag. Jermaine Johnson has one breakout year, the Florida State edge. So I think a lot of the edges, because you started with traits and size and all that stuff, but I would start with the production and say there are guys that have a little bit of risk, much like last year's class. And to me, a lot of those are back end of the first round guys, but there are fewer slam dunks than we've seen from some of these other drafts, I think, as far as edge goes.
How much of the Thibodeau stuff is this, like, this comes up with players every now and again of, oh, does he really love football that mm-hmm. much? Is football the number one thing to him? You know, voicing the idea that, like, you know, you have other interests
yeah.
is like a death sentence to your draft stock.
I think it's wrongly a lot of that. Wrongly a lot of that. However, when you talk to Bucky from NFL Media, when you talk to Jeremiah and McShay, they're hearing from teams, not media, that they're concerned with, again, and this is them, you know, kind of micro, you know, megaphoning them, it's concerned with how he can disappear in games and how he's not pedal to the metal at practice and pedal through the metal on tape. Now, the media has turned it into he has his own cryptocurrency, he has his own Discord where he plays for cryptocurrency for chess and chess games like that. People, the media has turned it into this big thing where, like, he's not into football, whatever, he wears sunglasses inside. It's ridiculous. But I buy into those credible sources like McShay and Jeremiah and Bucky when he is sliding down all three of their guys' boards. There is fire there. There is legitimate talk among NFL teams that he's not a top five player in this class for those reasons on the field. Now, you go back and watch the tape, you buy into him as a top player in this class, borderline, you know, number one, number two overall player. Now, when you start, you have to factor this into your evaluation, in my opinion. There's production grades, there's your own evaluation of the film, then there's the athletic testing, the medical checks, but you have to buy into this. People who are more connected than us, talking to NFL teams and getting the same feedback, right? Getting the same feedback that he could slide outside the top five, outside the top 10. It's very similar to Daniel Jeremiah was the first media analyst to have Mekhi Becton as the first tackle off the board because people, you know, again, teams were buying into him as this, you know, top five type of talent.
You're a sucker, man. It is lying season. You're a sucker.
I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker when all three of, like, literally God. The biggest names in draft media are
they're
saying
all getting
the same.
That's like when the agent sends out the mass tweet in Rappaport and Schefter, and they all copy and paste the agent's tweet. It's like, my player is working really, really hard, but he's not going to test at the combine.
So you think that Jeremiah, Mel Kiper, McShay, Brooks, all hearing the same thing.
They're fed the same information.
And you think it's not correct, and you don't think it's correct?
I'm not saying that necessarily.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it's correct. I mean,
it might be. Yeah, but like, teams have to do this, right? You only get one pick at four, mm-hmm. at three. You only get one pick. And these are data points. Not necessarily like, does he have crypto? But like,
I'm an investor, by the way.
I have to buy in.
How's he doing?
Crypto's getting crushed today.
Well,
crushed.
Kayvon's crypto is down.
Oh, you're an investor in his crypto?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, that's why. See how biased you are? You're interviewing Hutch. He's number one. You're investing in some bad crypto from Kayvon,
some
and he's
serious,
dropping. See how biased you are. Let me unpack your biases.
Here's how biased I am. I'm the only person in the last week and a half that has Kayvon Thibodeau going number two overall in my mock draft because I'm still buying into the player.
You're still buying into the crypto.
I'm not buying.
That bump. You need to get back the money you dumped into it.
I'm not buying into the crypto.
Why don't you do a documentary on him?
My opinion my official opinion on Kayvon Thibodeau, and there's more information to gain. There's more people to talk to. I'm not saying it's my final opinion. Is that Mel Kiper, Tom McShay, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks are all hearing the same thing, and I think teams are wrong to discredit some of this stuff. That's what I'm saying. I don't think they're hearing the same thing, and he'll fall because of it because teams are dumb. Teams have made bad decisions before.
This is the thing, right? So this is what I don't like about that stuff, right? We can all watch the tape and form our own opinions. The one area where we can't get in deep as much as NFL teams is that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's the deep interviews where you get to ask them whatever the hell you want behind closed doors and get away with it. It's, you know, talking to the people on background and finding out all this crazy stuff and then interpreting that however the hell you want, right? And that's where NFL teams get into trouble. And it's so we're hearing the same thing from all these guys who are talking to somebody else inside NFL teams, but we've no idea if the guy they're talking to.
And it's a game of telephone, too.
Right, and you've no idea if the guy they're talking to is an idiot. Mm-hmm. Every year you hear these quotes from anonymous scout, right? And it's like, this is absurd. Yeah. The stuff you're hearing from these people is ridiculous. Like, on its face, patently ridiculous. Mm-hmm. These are the same people that are talking to McShay and Kiper and whoever else.
And that's why my opinion on Thibodeau is not changing. Now, my forecast is changing because this is real. This is the teams think like this. Like, teams will legitimately compare Hutchinson and Thibodeau, and the reason they drop Thibodeau is because of what he'll be in the locker room and what they assume he'll be in the locker room. Like, that's exactly how teams view this. And I do think that's why he'll fall.
But there are also players where, like, they're right. You know what I mean? Like, there are times where that piece of information is really important and completely changes how you would evaluate a player. And without us having access to that stuff, there's no way you can be right, right?
No,
like, if you find out a guy is has like a drug problem or whatever, right? And he never comes out. The NFL teams know about it. They're dropping that guy rounds upon rounds, and you're sitting there completely in the dark, not having any idea about it.
And I honestly find it, like, very difficult to speak to it, right? I haven't sat down with Kayvon Thibodeau, and I haven't talked to any of these guys that are hearing these same things yet. But what you have to buy into is these credible analysts, this consensus opinion on Thibodeau that he is falling. And if you are forecasting in mock drafts, not doing what you would do, I think you have to buy into some of that.
I would just simplify it and say I think a lot of those concerns might be rolled up in the fact that he's got an 84 PFF grade. That's his best.
He has got a better pass rush grade, though.
Yeah, he's got the elite pass rush grade. But I would just say that is a red flag for a top five player. But he's still probably going to go top five in my mock. Hoops fans, the latest offer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is too good to pass up. How good, Austin?
360 windmill between the legs good, Steve.
Yeah, new customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your state, you can still take your shot at a big payday. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings daily fantasy basketball contests. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $1 on any NBA team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It's promo code PFF at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older. Minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Mm-hmm. That was good. I'm glad you did the 360 windmill dunk part for me.
That's a nice fun addition. It's a fun piece of the read. I enjoy read writers.
And but it's
I
a
enjoy
great deal.
There's also a lot of other wordplay in that read, too. It's like, too good to pass up. I'm all for it.
Oh, so you emphasize it differently than I did. Yeah, that's great. All right, we started with strengths of the draft. In is everybody's internet working still?
Yeah,
mine's out.
Yeah, that's mine. Wow.
I'll fix my computer. I'm internet free here.
Nice.
Just winging it.
You started with strength. We'll try to see if the iPad's connected. That's why we have the backup iPad.
Yeah, that's why.
Still connected. Any other strengths of the draft besides edge?
I do feel there is some strength at corner. It is top heavy, though. There is a bit of a fall off in terms of outside cornerback talent, probably after the first round. I think in my 2-round mock, I didn't have more than 2 corners going in the 2nd round. I think a lot of the top end guys will go highly, but I like a lot of the top end guys. Derek Stingley Jr., obviously of LSU, Ahmad Gardner of Cincinnati, big fan of Trent McDuffie out of Washington, even with the size concerns. I do
think
that
small.
He is small.
He is small. Mm. Did you have a take? I had you give him a look.
I mean, I like him, but he's really small.
He's really small. I don't like making same school comparisons, but like, there's a lot of Byron Murphy to his game. There's a lot of like, oh man, he's cool. Probably plays in the slot. No, but I want to try him on the outside. He's like that. He's that athletic. He's that talented, and also that productive. To go back to production, he was very productive at Washington for multiple years. And the way they talk about him, talking to some people working at Washington, some teammates, it's like this guy's a freak, like a legitimate freak show. And on our combine preview, we talk a lot about who's going to win the combine. Like, McDuffie's going to do some crazy stuff down there. An insane piece.
I didn't know if I was crazy because sometimes, you know, I was watching a bunch of offensive linemen, I think, first, and then I watched McDuffie, and so it's like I was just blown away by how he moves. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe how smooth he was flying around the football field. So I needed a sanity check from other people. Am I seeing this right, or is it just because I was watching line play before I watched him? But he does move differently, but he also looks small.
Offensive tackle is another position group too that's like a real strength of this class. Obviously, there's no consensus offensive tackle one. PFF right now has Charles Cross. In Daniel Jeremiah's latest mock draft, he has him falling to 22 and going behind Trevor Penning, which I don't think anyone has seen coming. But I think there's, again, a lot of intrigue in Penning.
People love Penning because he's such an asshole on the field.
And he's an athlete.
Teams love that.
Yeah, and he's an athlete. Like Cross, of these top five tackles, right? Cross from Mississippi State, Ike Ekwonu from NC State, Evan Neal, Alabama, Bernard Ryman of Central Michigan, and then Trevor Penning. Cross might technically test the worst of them, but it's still going to be very good. But Evan Neal's going to do some wild stuff. Penning's going to run faster than probably you'd ever expect someone of his size run. And like, that is going to dry these guys up. I mean, that's going to push these guys up. It's why he had Penning going number 6 overall to the Carolina Panthers, where other mock drafters are consistently putting Cross in that spot. I think the combine's not going to hurt Cross. But teams, we see time and time again, buy into this athletic testing so much that if you're not a freak, a literal freak, athletically 95th percentile type of player, you could fall behind guys like Ekwonu, Neal, Ryman, Penning.
So who, across the draft, who is going to do freaky things with the combine workouts?
Evan Neal, right? Evan Neal's going to do some wild things, pound for pound, going to do some wild things. And I'll say it, the bias is there, but Aiden Hutchinson is going to do some dumb things. He is running short shuttles at Michigan faster than defensive backs. People have questions about his bend, and he is running 3 cones near as fast as what Quiddy Pay was running at Michigan, like up to par with what Pei was running, and he's heavier. He's 265 pounds, like a true 265. He showed up to Michigan at 255, has added weight, has played as high as 270, 275. He's honing in on this 265 figure. I think for his weight and his size, he's going to test really, really well. And, you know, a lot of people highlight Kayvon Thibodeau and his explosiveness. Thibodeau's lighter, and I think it could be better from a number standpoint, but when you consider Aiden Hutchinson's weight, I think it's going to be crazy. And then Ojabo. You look at Ojabo, I mean, this guy's going to probably be faster than Aiden Hutchinson. He could run like low 4.5s. Boye Mafe of Minnesota is going to destroy the combine. I think Stingley, if fully healthy, could destroy the combine. I'm not sure if he's going to test, though.
The tackles you mentioned. So right now we have Charles Cross, then Icky from
NC
State.
Right now,
Evan Neal.
Yep.
So who's going to go number one overall? Because we've seen, I know Dane Brugler put Icky Ekwonu at number one.
Yeah.
A lot of people are putting Evan Neal. I know Seth, you know, our guy Galino over here at PFF loves Charles Cross, would put him at number one in his mock. Are these guys all in play at number one? Or is it just Neal?
This might be an old takes exposed moment, but I'll say no. I think Evan Neal is, if on any of these tackles go number one overall, it will be Evan Neal. And a lot of that will be because of his combine. And a lot of that will be because I do think people are going to buy into his projection doing pass protection and run blocking well, right? I think it's what you prioritize at the offensive tackle position. Do you specifically need a left tackle versus trying to bring in someone to play right tackle? A lot of that will depend. And at number one overall, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are locking into a left tackle. And I think that's what Evan Neal can be. He's a, in my opinion, a guy that's very balanced from a projection perspective. You've seen good things in pass protection. You've seen good things as a run blocker. With Cross playing in that Mike Leach offense, you've seen great things as a pass protector, right? Super smooth, but maybe not the same tenacity or same success as a run blocker. And then with Ekwonu, the guy's a bully, like a legitimate bully that hurts people on the field. And if you want to bring in someone who could come in, play guard or tackle, that inside-outside versatility and destroy people in the trenches, Ekwonu's going to be your guy. I think knowing those flavors of tackle, I think the flavor that the Jacksonville Jaguars would pick if they do go tackle is Evan Neal.
How much of a concern is that Mike Leach offense? Because tackles have come out of that system before, and the big kind of question mark is, yeah, their grades are fantastic, their pass protection looks great. On the other hand, they don't ever really take a true NFL set. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that?
No, it's going to be a concern, right? I think you're referencing Andre Dillard, kind of subtweeting.
Yeah, and even if you go back further than that, like guys like Joe Dahl, it's like, well, he's fantastic, but he's got tiny arms, so we're not even going to try him a tackle. He plays guard at the NFL. Like that offense is so weird that it completely skews how teams take offensive linemen from that.
It'll be a concern, and I think it's why – you know, you're seeing some of the consensus start to drop Charles Cross down boards, right? Falling as far as 22 to Las Vegas Raiders. I think that's why. It's a part of that, I think, is because people are forecasting his athletic testing won't make headlines and be on Twitter and cut-ups like Evan Neal's and Ekwonu's will be. But I think the other reason for that, too, is that maybe not buying into this Mike Leach offense, knowing that guys like Andre Dillard, you know, Abraham Lucas of Washington State's another guy that's pass protected a ton and had success, but maybe you're not buying into it because it's a similar kind of pass set situation.
I'll just say, when you look historically at PFF grades, our wins above average metric, and the ways we've analyzed offensive linemen, tackle in particular, we've done a really good job of projecting tackles. So for me, with Charles Cross from Mississippi State, only 1 year of production, his 2020 tape wasn't great. So you guys gotta don't skip the PFF stuff. Don't skip the grades in production, because that's one of the reasons why I would have concerns about Cross. One of the reasons I would have concerns about Thibodeau is because at positions that we project pretty well, those guys are kind of behind some of their peers. Now, it's tough with a guy like Penning, who has like a 99 run blocking grade at the FCS level because he just crushes people. That's not always apples to apples, but I think Cross's production would be a little bit of a concern for me.
How much are you a personal fan of Daniel Faalele just because of his size?
Just look, I just relate to 400 pounders.
Right.
Yeah.
You are not 400 pounds.
I'm not 400 pounds.
You could get there, though.
But I'm,
you know,
maybe
you and me.
I'm pushing three bills. I'm pushing three.
If I got to 400 pounds, I think I'd be dead.
Is he 6'9" or 10?
Nine.
He's not. He was listed at
6'9", 380.
Yeah. I appreciate guys like that.
You probably still got bigger hands.
We'll find out soon. If you guys could donate to my GoFundMe, you could find out my
hand
size.
That's what we get from your charity, is finding out how big your hands are. And he's I think you need a reset there.
But there's also the possibility that I tear my Achilles like Kyle Brandt.
See, I would do it if you guaranteed that. Yeah, I will tear my Achilles.
I will show you the video of Steve tearing his Achilles.
All right, I won't warm up and I'll do it and we'll see.
I will run 40-yard dashes until I tear my Achilles for the charity.
I donate.
I would donate.
Yeah, see?
What about wide receiver? Would you consider that a strength, or is it just every single year it's another flavor thing? There's Z receivers, there's X receivers, there's slot receivers. That's what we're going to get every single year. Is it a strength, or is this just standard? We're going to see good receivers every year.
I think it's a flavor thing. I talked to Danny Kelly, who's a draft analyst at The Ringer, and he calls it a vibes thing. It's a vibe. What vibe are you into? Are you into, you know, a speedster? Are you into the smooth-moving Chris Olave, the size with Drake London? My thing, too, is that, like, receiver is a sexy position. And when quarterbacks stink, people are flocking to this wide receiver class. But I wouldn't take any of these guys ahead of Chase, Waddle, or Devontae Smith. I'll say that right now. I do think that the receiver class is good. I don't think it's great. I think Drake London can develop into this high-end wide receiver one with a wide receiver two floor. I think Garrett Wilson could develop into this wide receiver one with a wide receiver two floor. Olave, the same situation. With Williams, there's concern with the injury and what he'll develop into. And I have the same concern with Burks, right? Like, Burks, in my opinion, is
Jameson Williams.
I'm sorry.
From Alabama. Sorry. So it's kind of like, you know, you teach us when we're writing.
Yeah.
Say the full name in the school first.
I like that.
So that the people know.
No, you're right.
This is advice I would give you. I was going to save it for off camera, but we're going to do it right here because this is what we do. We're very professional here.
Transparent.
We just do off camera stuff on camera. Hmm. So just say the full name.
Drake London, USC wide receiver is the number 10th ranked.
You don't have to go back. I know.
But Treylon Burks.
Sorry, you were going with Treylon Burks.
Treylon Burks, Arkansas receiver, a true 6'3", 225. I think you see some receivers listed at that weight, and you're like, yeah, can he get to there? This guy was 230 a year ago and was being made fun of in the Arkansas locker room for being kind of chubby. Like, he got down to 225, and I think in this training process is, like, legitimately cutting body fat percentage, right? He's going to be a true 225. And the comp that people are throwing around with Burks, in my opinion, wrongly, is A.J. Brown. He is not A.J. Brown. He does not have that jitter. He does not have that side-to-side agility. He is more a D.K. Metcalf. He is a D.K. Metcalf type. He is a guy that in a straight line is wildly explosive and has absurd size for the wide receiver position. Now, the concern I have is I don't think he's as athletic as D.K. Metcalf, right? I don't think he's as fast. Maybe he's as athletic, but maybe not as in a straight line as fast or explosive as D.K. Metcalf, which is not necessarily a knock considering that Metcalf is a freak. But I would not be surprised. I think it would even be minus money if DraftKings offered it that he doesn't test the short shuttle or the three cone. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if Burks does not do that, knowing what happened to DK Metcalf when that happened.
But he is supposed to run in the 4.3s.
Yes. And I think he could. I think low 4.4s.
At 225.
If you just see, that's all you need to see, right? 225.
Right. 225 that has a 4.3
with no agility. Sold. That's the thing. That's the crazy thing. Like, if DK never ran
those first drills,
he's easily a first rounder.
Yeah, but his wasn't, like, his problem wasn't his, you know, three cone was not great. His problem was his three cone was slower than Tom Brady. It was like, this is unbelievably catastrophic.
He looked like an aircraft carrier trying to turn around, and people got very scared that he couldn't run a route and maybe missed the fact that first off, you talk about situation. He went to a great situation. Hey, run deep, run slants. But if he never runs those, he's a first round. DK Metcalf, first rounder.
Yeah.
So Burks, I've seen him put a little wiggle on Roger McCrary in the open field and all that stuff. I don't think he's
maybe not as stiff as Tom Brady three cone DK Metcalf, but I do think it's stiffer than people want him to be. Right.
DK is definitely a better comp than AJ Brown.
Mm-hmm.
The correct comp is David Boston.
Yeah, which is a player I have not watched.
Right.
I don't know who David Boston even is. So
you would love David Boston.
David Boston was a wide receiver who jacked himself to the gills with potentially the roids.
Wow.
And was like blazing fast. Had like bicep. Like, look, you remember that picture of LaRon Landry? Who was just that was basically David Boston, but like roided out of his mind and playing wide receiver. It was incredible to watch.
There was a hilarious time in sports media at like the beginning of this century where they would do these think pieces, and I remember reading one on David Boston. It's like, that David Boston, he just works so hard. He takes up to 40 pills every day and it's all timed up.
What?
And all these different things. I saw this on like Bill Romanowski and all these guys who later it's like, oh, he was just taking steroids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, he was just beating the steroid program or whatever. Yeah. I don't know if there was ever a Barry Bonds think piece, but they used to always, you know, compliment these guys. Oh, he worked hard this offseason, put on 40 pounds of muscle.
It's sports science.
Like, right?
Those guys are finding the scientific edge.
Those workouts these days, you know?
I don't remember that media, but I think it would have been pretty stellar
content. It was hilarious. And there was David Boston, 40 pills a day, or just like, you know. I don't want to accuse him of anything, but he was
He got caught, didn't he? We're not just like slandering.
Oh, wow. We got a picture on YouTube. Yeah, shout out to Oh, my gosh. What? That's him?
Yeah. Yeah.
That wide doesn't receiver. Even look real.
There's, it's a wide receiver.
There's some pretty spectacular.
That was as he got old, too.
Like this kind of stuff.
Oh, my gosh. That's insane.
Anyway, so anytime Sam drops a comp from 15, 20 years ago, I'm all in.
Oh, no, there we go. There's your best one. There's your best one.
That looks unreal. I'll tell you right now, he's not. Traylon Burks does not look like that with his shirt off. It's not that big. Well, you know, it's not that big.
I love how you do interviews with all these guys, get all the dirt, and then call them soft behind their back.
I didn't call them soft. I didn't say Traylon Burks.
You said other people called him soft. That's a great way to.
I didn't say other people call him soft.
Soft wasn't the word he used. Chubby, I think. Was.
Well, no, he's called himself chubby. He said in an interview with Traylon Burks, he's like, I was chubby and people made fun of me for it. Now I'm down to like a ripped up 225.
Did you make him take a shirt off?
I didn't make him take a shirt off.
No.
But, I mean, more on Traylon Burks. I think the combine will be interesting, right? If he does not test the short shoulder three cone, I would not be stunned. And I wouldn't be stunned if he doesn't do it at his pro day either, because we've seen what happens if a 6'3", 225-pounder receiver runs a 4.3 or even low 4.4s. They're going to buy into him as a first-rounder, top-end first-rounder. It doesn't matter what his three-cone will be. Now, you put that three-cone aircraft carrier on tape, there might be some reluctance, right, from people. And I'm interested to see what would you – because I can agree to a point where, like, he wins the valuable routes, right? He wins the DK Metcalf routes, the slants, the streaks and stuff. But he did have a very low average depth of target last year because they loved getting him involved behind the line of scrimmage and getting him the ball quickly.
It was a really bizarre.
Because the quarterback play wasn't great at Arkansas, right?
I think he was lined up, like, at fullback and stuff. Like, it was a weird deployment that they – It was literally just to get the ball in his hands.
Exactly.
Which is a good thing, like for their offense.
They just did not trust their quarterback to...
Correctly,
yeah, because Burks could win the valuable routes, but he's not hitting the... You know, the quarterback's not hitting the valuable routes. How do we get the ball into Burks' hands? I tell you right now, it's not the easiest. It's not hitting him in stride on a go ball. It's the easiest to get Burks in the... You know, Burks the ball is behind the line of scrimmage stuff.
I honestly didn't think Burks... His balance and ball skills looked great. You know, that'd be as much my concern as anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you're watching... The Ohio State guys who aren't freaks like him, they just get open and catch the ball and all that stuff, right? And with Burks, I just don't know if he has the pure – like he goes up and gets it sometimes. There's other times he looks a little off. So the opposite of what I was saying earlier where I feel like you can look at tackle grades and look at defensive line grades, and to me it should be a starting point. And you could if you see a guy grading in the 70s, it'd be a red flag in those positions. Receiver is one that takes a lot more nuance because of what we're describing here, right? Because usage pattern, you know, with defensive linemen and offensive linemen, it's how well do you win one-on-ones, and that translates pretty well at the NFL level. With receiver, usage pattern, what you're going to do in the NFL versus college, big playability, there are these other things where you don't just necessarily look at the grades and trust it, which, by the way, you can get all these grades for 25% off using the promo code NFLPOD. So any PFF subscription, 25% off, promo code's NFLPOD. If you guys listen to Tailgate, do not use the Tailgate promo. Yeah. It's NFLPOD is the one that you use.
Fair.
For 25% off all of our college subscriptions, the draft guide.
And you can go back to listening to Tailgate now. We didn't allow people to listen to your show yesterday because you made us late.
We told everybody to just go one show. Totally.
Again, that's
today,
fair.
Today, you can go back.
That's totally fair.
You guys can go watch Tailgate. They do three shows a week, so you can just skip one.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch the other two and everything else going forward.
You bring up receiving grades, and I do think that another reason for, you know, them taking – not taking them with a grain of salt necessarily, but, like, looking deeper at them is that there's multiple ways to win in PFF receiving grades, right? If you break a ton of missed tackles on a low average depth of target, you're going to earn a high receiving grade. The same 85 or 86 that another receiver can earn from winning vertically and winning down the football field, maybe more valuable routes or whatever it may be. So I do think that since there's multiple ways to skin the cat in earning high receiving grades, that's why there is some volatility. And you can't just – it's not as simple as, oh, he graded this well and this guy graded worse. It's more how was he used, how did he earn that grade, and all that stuff. And, again, the receiving position – you know, I think Daniel Jeremiah had a tweet that said, you know, what you need to do to win a Super Bowl in 2022 or how you build a Super Bowl competitive team, you need offensive playmakers galore. And I could not agree with that more, in that it's no – you do not need a good receiver. You need multiple weapons, multiple options in an offense. Like, that's why – you know, that's why the Green Bay Packers get brought up a ton with only having Davante Adams, whereas other teams that have, you know, a plethora of weapons like the Chiefs or the Bills, you know, the Rams. The Rams traded for Odell Beckham Jr. when Robert Woods was healthy, right? Like, they were like, hey, we have Robert Woods. We have Cooper Kupp, who's on pace to, like, break records and win the Triple Crown. And we still want Odell Beckham Jr. because we know how valuable it is to have offensive playmakers galore. And I think when you're looking at drafting receivers, specifically these guys, which of these guys is going to fit the need in your offense the best to help you get again, to offensive playmakers galore, because I don't think right now, there could be a they could develop into this. I don't think there's this like day one alpha wide receiver one. Yeah. Drake London, I think, is the closest to that because he was that for USC, like 15 targets a game before he's getting hurt. Like, you can project him as that. But honestly, and I think a lot of analysts agree with this too, his best role might be like a big slot type of role where he's working against smaller cornerbacks and stuff, and the separation comes easier.
Yeah, like, the other thing about receiver is it's not one position, right? It's at least three different positions.
Very good
more.
Point.
And that's part of the reason that the flavors thing is important, because you're not necessarily looking at all of these prospects for each one of these roles, right? They get segmented, and it gets, most people just put a wide receiver rankings list out there because trying to categorize each one of these like receiver roles within an offense gets messy.
Doesn't get good clicks either.
That too, right? But it also gets ugly, and you can kind of divide it down too much and the whole thing just becomes a joke. But there's something to it, like the idea that each one of these guys fits a different role, and particularly in this draft class, it seems that there are very different styles of receiver at the top of this draft relative to other years where a lot of guys are kind of similar in terms of how you would use them at the next level. But like Drake London and Garrett Wilson are completely different players. Yep. And would be used in a completely different way. Olave, Treylon Burks, these are not the same position players.
It also depends on your QB too, right? If you're the Jets and you have your pick of these receivers at 10, do you want a Drake London? Is he the best fit for Zach Wilson? Do you want Zach Wilson thrown to a big-bodied receiver? Do you want him just having a guy that gets open? How does he mesh with, as you mentioned, Corey Davis and the other guys on the team? So, yeah, there's a lot to figure out as far as the receiver position goes.
I think Sam brings up a really good point, and an under-discussed point in covering the NFL draft, is that these positions are not as simple as take the best receiver available and that's your guy. I think that fragmentation goes even out to cornerback, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're putting together a mock draft and you're like, you put this corner after this corner, are you high? It's like, no, this corner fits better into this defense than this other cornerback does. And like, that's how teams view it. Teams look at this as not, this is our top receiver and he's the best talent. They're like, okay, this guy would fit in our offense the best. This guy fits what we need the best. And that is a massive part of how they construct their big boards. It's not, when you have these third-party big boards, which is a PFF board, an ESPN board, an NFL media board, they're saying, who are the best players, right? They're not building to an offense. They're not like, who fits in our offense
in isolation.
Exactly. The NFL teams are not building these boards in isolation. They could think X player is the best player in the draft, but have him lower than number one on their board because he doesn't fit in the defense or doesn't fit in their offense.
I've said before that I think teams would potentially even do better if they junked their entire scouting department, used the consensus big board to draft, and the scouting department essentially just became a background check service, right? Mm-hmm. To get all that stuff that you don't get, without diving into it and interviewing these guys and just essentially just taking guys off the board, right?
Yeah.
For character or for background or whatever it is. That's what the scouting department should be. The one caveat to that would be that depending on your scheme, you're going to adjust that overall consensus big board because that is done in a vacuum. And if you run a radically unique scheme in terms of, man coverage or whatever, you're going to move guys in a different order to that big board that isn't factoring that stuff in.
I would also say that, it's not highlighted what percentage of a scout's job is to determine if he's good or he's bad or where he ranks, and what percentage of his job is to determine how he fits into the offense, right? I think scouts are not just, is this player good or is this player bad? It's more, okay, this is what this player is, and that information is what's provided to the decision makers. Like, okay, this is how good he thinks it is, but what's more important is what can I do with him, right? Like, what can I do with this quarterback? What can I do with this offensive tackle versus what I can do with others?
The underrated part, though, a scout's job is really full info gathering. What is he like? It's your interview process, right? Everything that you do.
Thing that people scoff at here at PFF.
I
think is valuable.
There is value there, but it's also figuring out, how to apply that. I mean, that's what scouts are doing, is trying to figure out a guy's history and everything.
The other thing about that is, so if you're a GM, right, if you're the guy who's tasked with adding the personnel to the roster, and you have a coach that runs scheme X and he wants players that fit that exactly, and like, this is the best possible guy, it's not necessarily in your interest as a GM to make your roster that specialized to one specific scheme, because like, that coach might not be there in a couple of years' time.
Yeah.
And all right, yeah, everyone would love it if he was, but do you necessarily want to go along with what the coach wants in terms of playing personnel, knowing that in a couple of years' time, if we have a bad year, that guy's getting drop kicked out of the building and I can't have a roster of people that don't fit any other scheme. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually need to build this thing to a certain degree in a sort of one-size-fits-all type of way.
I also think the best coaches adapt scheme to their players, right? Like, that we've seen
a
lot of them don't. And a lot of them, I would argue, again, the best coaches see a player and say, how can I win with him? And what do I need to change to win with him? Because he's this good. Now, you don't do that for guys you draft on day two and day three. But if there is a player that's available on day one, you're like, I don't know how he fits into our offense. Or it's like, okay, he's this good, though. Can we find a way? Can we find a way to make him work?
But there's also and that's true and an important point. But there's also a degree to which you can only do that so many times, right, before you just, like, all of these mismatched pieces don't create anything. Like, this is just a collection of guys who are talented, but there's literally no way this puzzle goes together because each one of them has a weird, unique skill set that I can't build around all the way.
An analogy I've used that I think you'll hate, Sam, so I'm going to call this ahead of time, is that if you're building a menu, right, a tasting menu at, like, a 3-star Michelin restaurant, and you have, I'm making this item, and this item, and then somehow late in the process, or not late in the process,
I can see one here. Let's see if you go there.
Okay, somehow late in the process, that the chef or whoever is making this, like, hey, we have like $10,000 caviar. Can you fit this into the menu? And if you are the chef that says, nah, I'm sticking to it, the mac and cheese has to be plate number one, it's like, bro, you're gonna have to make some plays here. You're gonna have to find a way to fit the caviar into the menu because we have this rare opportunity to get a $10,000 caviar. Now, is that player in this class? Who knows? But I do think that that's how you kind of have to treat this sometimes.
Is that where you would have gone with it?
It's not where I was going with that. It feels
Do you
like,
hate it?
No, it's all right. I don't hate that. The point that I was making, though, with you can only do that so many times before it just becomes a mess, it would be like if you're creating this tasting menu for some sort of fancy-ass restaurant, and like each individual tasting plate, you know, the tiny morsel handed and expected to pay a giant sum of money for is food. If each one of those is like a completely disparate, random, like ethnic specialty from wherever, and together it just doesn't function. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like at some point there has to be like a coherent strategy that all of these players are capable of building together and creating something that is greater than the sum of the parts.
All right, before we get into the weaknesses of the draft, what do we have for a count here? Oh, wow. I'm still at -1 metaphors. Can we get Austin in the count here?
I don't know if it was a metaphor as much as it was an analogy.
What's the difference?
I guess I don't know.
Well, let's get to
I guess
friends.
I don't know, actually. I guess I actually don't
back
know.
The word. You're going to need to come up with a reason why it's funny. Not the same thing.
Tyler's interrupting me, reminding about our friends at All22. We unveiled this yesterday, that they just unveiled their newest fantasy football game that hundreds of PFF employees have been playing. Who won the league last year?
I'm not sure, actually. It wasn't me. You won?
I don't know. I'm going to declare victory.
I like it.
Because, I mean, nobody can check me on it. All22 uses weekly PFF grades as one of its main scoring components and tests your ability to build not just a fantasy team, but a full 53-man roster, offensive line included. Finally, Sam told the story how we've been doing this, dreaming of this for years, and three friends put this all together, pitched it to us, and they're making it all happen. If you've ever dreamt of sitting in an NFL front office, and if you enjoy the scouting process, you want to check out All22. And here's how you do it. Join the waitlist at all-22.com with nothing more than your email. Just put your email in there, all-22.com. If you join the waitlist before the NFL draft, you'll receive a special promo code for your All22 subscription. Waitlist users will even gain access to premium content like inaugural draft guides, in-season strategies, feature release announcements, and more. Be sure to follow at all22_PFF on Twitter.
You ready? I found out the difference. You ready for it?
Yeah.
I've done some research here.
Thank you.
So
it's
Google,
simple Google.
Well, yeah. Well, you say that, right? But this is the world we live in.
I've done the research.
Right now. It's too easy to find information. You have to find the right information.
Fair enough.
So Google initially just is like, oh, it's a type of, an analogy is a type of metaphor, or a metaphor is a type of analogy. Effectively, they're the same, right? You got to dive deeper. Mm. Masterclass.com suggests that the difference between the two is that an analogy is a metaphor, but with the ultimate goal of making a point about the comparison.
Mm.
Whereas a metaphor can just be creating
for
a comparison.
Fun.
Just for giggles.
I like
just
that.
For giggles.
I don't think this is a part of the
simile uses like or as.
Yeah, yes. That I know. That
I
know.
That's a type of metaphor.
That
right.
One's good. I do think that.
Why is Drew so mad at you in the YouTube channel?
I don't know. I just gave him I love you. I love you,
I look at you.
I'm a big fan
look
of Drew.
You stepping up.
I don't know. I wanted to add something to All22 read. I think it's an awesome thing that they're trying to do and work toward, and I think it's something that everyone who wants to play fantasy football you know, I think their tagline is more football, less fantasy. And like,
I didn't get to that. Yeah, Sam cut me off.
An example of that, right, is that in fantasy football, your whole goal is to predict box score statistics. It's not necessarily predict its performance.
Warped,
yeah, it's warped toward red zone targets, red zone opportunities. How many rushes is this running back getting on the goal line? And oftentimes, the biggest frustration for fantasy football players is like, why are you handing the ball off to Mike Tolbert when LT is back there, objectively the better player? What All 22 is trying to do is leveraging PFF grades as a component is to turn your predictions, right, your forecasting in fantasy football into how good is this player, right? And like a key example,
which was the original point,
exactly,
of the whole thing.
Exactly. And a key example of that, right, is Aaron Jones catches a 40-yard bomb over the top on a wheel route that Aaron Rodgers drops in a bucket, is going to receive such a high grade from PFF or Aaron Rodgers. Now, if Aaron Rodgers dumps off a screen behind the line of scrimmage and Aaron Jones scores, it's the same points in fantasy. But what was better, right? What was better player performance? And then that doesn't even factor in the blocking component that you get from tight ends and offensive linemen. It's a really cool idea for those that are, I guess, unsatisfied with predicting box score stats in fantasy football.
So they've also factored in positional value.
Yes.
So quarterbacks will be weighted higher. Offensive lines will be weighted properly. It's not equivalent across the board. So positional value is in there as well. So the strategic component to this game is through the roof. And it might take a couple years of playing to actually get a feel for like where you should be strategically, right? But this is going to change the industry. So go check it out and just throw your email in. Be a part of the launch here, all-22.com. Weaknesses of the draft, Austin. Where are there issues? Where are we not going to be able to find as many players? Or where are teams going to have to maybe spend their resources in free agency rather than the draft?
I won't say there are going to be issues here, right? But interior defensive line, and it's kind of become a trend that it is a weak interior defensive line class like it has been in previous years. Right now, PFF's DT1 is Devontae Wyatt, the other Georgia defender who went to the Senior Bowl and looked different. Like at the Senior Bowl, he was a different player than the class of players that were there. I know Jermaine Johnson, who ended up not even doing the third day of practice in the game because of how much success he had, was a big winner there. But I think for Devontae Wyatt, I do think he was another big winner at Senior Bowl, a guy that I think ultimately is the first defensive tackle off the board. And that is not to discredit what Jordan Davis, the other Georgia defensive tackle, is capable of. Jordan Davis, 6'6", 340, is more than capable of coming in for an NFL team and being a two-gapping, run-stopping defensive tackle. The value of that is not what Devontae Wyatt could be capable of with further development, etc. 6'3", 315, with legitimate pass rush win rates, right? With legitimate pass rushing production. Jordan Davis, on the other hand, has never played more than 400 snaps in a single season, is a bigger player that is prioritized on rundowns, has never had more than 11 pressures in a season. And when you look at, you know, I was doing an exercise looking at overthecap.com and who are the highest paid non-quarterbacks in the NFL. It is guys who can stop the pass. You know, it is edged players, it is pass rushing defensive tackles, it is cornerbacks. That, you know, and positional value is something that gets thrown around a lot, and I think the understanding around positional value has improved. But what is positional value? How much are you paying players at certain positions and what they can do versus others, right? The lowest paid positions in the NFL are run-stuffing DTs, run-stuffing linebackers, you know, box safeties, these things. The highest paid positions in the NFL are quarterback, receiver, edge, alt corner, like the guys that can actually affect the passing game. That's why I do ultimately feel that Wyatt goes one. Davis is probably the second DT off the board. But if you told me you can have Jordan Davis in the 20 to 32 range in the first round, or Travis Jones, a 6'5", 330-pound nose tackle out of UConn in the second, I'm taking Travis Jones 10 times out of 10, just considering the value you're getting.
He had a great Senior Bowl as well, right? I mean,
yeah.
He's huge. Jordan Davis, I'm looking at the draft guide right now. I love the Jordan Davis comp. John Henderson, big, huge defensive tackle.
Shocker.
From the Jaguars.
Shocker that you would love that.
He's not a mid-90s Jaguar. He's a 2000s Jaguar.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Leftwich Jaguar, Henderson. But, man, I mean, that it raises a fair question with Jordan Davis. Never played more than 400 snaps. You mentioned handful of pressures. The other nose tackles that have gone in recent years who are that size in the first round, Dexter Lawrence, Vita Vea, those guys rush the passer.
Yeah.
Those guys
yeah.
push the pocket, and they could play 800 snaps a year. Does Jordan Davis ultimately go in the first round? I just don't see it. I don't think he goes. I love him as a player for what he brings to the table. I love the fact that he's, you know, you can't move him at the point of attack, and he can shed, and he can get up and down the line of scrimmage at his size. But, man, I just don't see Jordan Davis going in the first round.
I do think he goes in the first round, and I wouldn't personally take him in the first round. I do think that a counterargument to the snaps conversation with Jordan Davis, right? He didn't play any snaps. He's tired all the time, is that Georgia's defensive line had a ton of talent, right? They needed to get a ton of different players in there. They have an underclassman, Jalen Carter, who they wanted to see the field a ton this year. Like, there is that reason for maybe why he didn't do 600, 700 snaps. And teams will flock to what Jordan Davis can do for a defense, right? And I think we've seen time and time again teams prioritize this type of player. I think Derrick Brown had more to offer as a pass rusher, but was billed as this high floor, safe pick, as this two-gapping run defender. I don't even think anyone's brought up Derrick Brown over the last 12 months, right? Like, he did not have this like superstar impact for the Carolina Panthers, doing exactly what they drafted him to do, play the run and be somewhat of a stable pass rusher when they give him the opportunity. I do think Davis goes in the first round. It's why he won best defensive player in college football, right? It's easy to talk yourself into Jordan Davis. And again, like, don't discredit what Jordan Davis is capable of. What he'll do in the NFL is good, like stopping the run, two-gapping, all that stuff. I think where teams are catching up is the value of that. And I think we'll see ultimately where he goes. I like the fit to the Buffalo Bills at 25. That's the earliest I take Jordan Davis. But I do think he ultimately goes in the first round.
I was thinking about him to the Bills just because it's something they don't have, right? I mean, they are deep on the defensive line. They've got some people to change, but they've been weak against the run. And that fits what they would want to do, where he could take up multiple blockers and open things up so they don't get gashed against the run. But
is there a reason why interior defensive line has been weak the last couple of years?
That's a good question, right? I do think that some of this is you see Aiden Hutchinson, Cameron Thomas of San Diego State, making sure we mention the school there, and George Karloftis of Purdue. These guys are 260, 270, right? And not adding the weight, which maybe some of them could, right, to be like a 290, 300. Because guess what? Defensive tackles don't get paid as much as edge players, right? How much are you going to do? What are you going to do if you're given this opportunity to, like, hey, you can add weight to 290 and play on the inside and paid significantly less in the NFL, or you try and stick it out at this 260 mark, this 270 mark, and play along the edge. I mean, I think you're going to see more of those types. Like, Trayvon Walker, I bet, could add enough weight to play on the inside. DeMarvin Leal could add enough weight to play on the inside, but these guys are striving to get to the 270, 265 mark to play along the edge and, guess what, make more money.
And those guys used to be 3-4 defensive ends, right? Those are the guys that would play at 285, 290. Play old school 3-4 defensive end. We don't even talk about 3-4 defensive ends anymore.
They don't really exist anymore.
They don't. I mean, because nobody's playing enough base defense, and you're 3-4 teams play 4-man fronts and nickel, and you're playing 3 technique, right? There's no more. I mean, guys play 4 and 5 technique, but you're taking your undersized defensive tackle and just kind of like letting him do it when he needs to, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a fair point. I think guys are not, just like I think probably a lot of, you're finding a lot of receivers because there's more opportunity in college. I think college players are specifically saying, let me be closer to an edge than an interior.
I'd also say a high-impact, three-down defensive tackle in the NFL is rarer than a high-impact pass rusher along the edge. I mean, there was one Aaron Donald. There was one Fletcher Cox for a handful of years in his prime. There's no one else that's entering. I mean, Chris Jones of Kansas City, right, is another one. Where with edge, there is more of a conversation of who the best edge is, and there are a lot of top guys. Yeah. Khalil Mack, TJ Watt, both of the Bosas, Myles Garrett, I didn't bring up Myles Garrett, who could be the best one in the NFL right now. It's less rare, and why is that? Because guess what? It's very hard to be 300 pounds and that good, you know, rushing the passer. Aaron Donald is one of one. Chris Jones is one of another
Donald's
one.
Donald's also like not close to 300 pounds. Like,
exactly.
He's an absolute outlier in every possible
it's
way.
It's so much harder to affect the passing game the bigger you get. That's a fact. That's literally a fact. It's why linebackers are getting lighter. You know, there's less of a concern with a 225-pound linebacker than there was 10 years ago.
Any other positions that are lacking? Because the funny part about interior D-line, it's the NFL too, our free agent list. And when when Sam and I and a few others were putting it together, it's like, how are we ranking this, right? It's older guys and guys that should be rotational players. So it's part of the trend of all football that we're lacking interior defensive linemen. Any other positions that stand out that aren't great?
Interior offensive line lacks depth. I think Tyler Linderbaum, the highest I've seen him mocked is in, I think, 14, the Baltimore Ravens. I think you have him going in your mock, a little teaser to your mock draft. Tyler Linderbaum of Iowa is objectively the best center in this class, potentially the best center PFF has scouted over the last, since 2014, maybe getting ahead of Frank Ragnow, and he's right up there as like I agree with that. I just think he will drop down boards because of positional value and people not coveting the center position inside the top 15, top 20 picks anymore. Kenyon Green is a really talented interior offensive lineman for Texas A&M. I think a guy that could go as high in the top 15, top 20. And then you have Zion Johnson, and then here comes the cliff. Guess what? There's, you know, Dylan Parham of Memphis. That's more of a day two player. Donovan West of Arizona State, definitely a day two, maybe even day three player. Darian Kennard.
Where does he end up? I was going to ask you about Kennard, the tackle from Kentucky.
Darian Kennard, tackle from Kentucky, who wants to play tackle in the NFL. He's been very adamant about that. He is a phenomenal interview, too. He's a very scary, intimidating player that is massive.
I got your back if you're afraid. I can stand up to him.
Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. The Darian Kennard piece, though, is that he played tackle almost exclusively to start at the Senior Bowl and looked great. I mean, he was highlighted after day one as the top offensive tackle and went toe-to-toe with Jermaine Johnson in a one-on-one in front of the entire field there, and he was great. Now, day two, day three, he sees more reps at guard. He gets beat up a bit. The speed is a concern. The athleticism is a concern. And I think more people who have been trying to push him into play guard at the next level kind of got their priors confirmed as the Senior Bowl progressed. He was still very good. I think I'd rather play him at guard at the next level. He's probably a day two player for me. But again, it's limited in depth. Like Linderbaum, Green, I didn't even bring up Zion Johnson of Boston College, who I think is one of the more pro-ready interior offensive linemen up there with Green and Linderbaum. And then after that, it's Kennard and a bit of a drop-off.
Is Linderbaum good enough that teams should start reassessing position value for that one guy, right? You know, the way Quentin Nelson was good enough that you change how much you value guard for that one guy at the top of the draft.
I think there's two ways to react to that. One, he's definitely good enough to consider it on the field, right, of like what a value the center is, and maybe you do put him inside the top 10 because you're that sure he's going to be good. Yeah. I think with Quentin Nelson, it was less so we're going to get, they knew they were getting an elite guard, but they were so confident that he would be good for a long time, right? The floor for Nelson's projection was insane.
It was the certainty of how good he would be.
Exactly. With Linderbaum, I think there's similar certainty, maybe not Quentin Nelson levels, right? But there is similar certainty. I think the other piece, and I want more research on this, maybe calling out to you, Steve, or other data science here, is the value of a center beyond the position, you know, that what his on-field production, right? Like they set pass protections oftentimes. They're a big communicator in the offense. I think having more conversation with coaches and offensive coaches, offensive line coaches about the value of a center and the differences between a center that maybe isn't that type of player for an offense who's calling protections and leading from that place, and then a guy that's maybe really good, right, can block and all that stuff, but isn't doing anything from the mental side.
And, like, and we don't know. Where, I mean, we can watch Linderbaum's tape and say he's special, he does all this stuff.
We don't know where he is.
Clearly, that's the thing that we can't really quantify, how well they are with protections and all that stuff. The other thing I'll add, I gave him to the Ravens, and I'm thinking about it. I'm like, man, they run a lot of power and counter, which is not that doesn't feature the center a whole lot. But with a guy like Linderbaum who can pull, get out into space, be a huge part of his own scheme, I think it expands what a team can do from a run game perspective too. So that's the other, from like a scheme fit standpoint, do you say, does this guy fit or does he expand what they're able to do? I'd love to see the Ravens expand what they could do, have a Linderbaum come in and just really take their run game, which is awesome, you know, to the next level.
That's an important piece of his evaluation too. Do you believe he can run any scheme? Because there are some that feel he's only going to be running this zone stuff, kind of similar to like Garrett Bradbury, because he falls into that size.
Yeah. So category. Somebody emailed us and was asking about him being undersized. And it's not that they were referencing his height, which he's like 6'3 or something, but it's the fact that at 6'3, he's under 300 pounds. Yeah. Like he's a reasonably tall center, but is light.
And I'll be honest, I won't say any player is maxed out. The NFL can do wild things to your body, but he's close to it. I mean, he came in as a tight end and has added legitimate weight every year of his career at Iowa. They have been actively adding weight to Tyler Linderbaum, and Iowa is one of the best programs to do it, right? They've done it with a lot of other players. So him getting the NFL, and you're like, okay, but he can add another 20, add another 30. If Linderbaum hasn't gotten there yet, I'd be hard pressed to understand a team doing what more they could do with Iowa. Whereas with Treylon Burks, I'll tell you what, you can add probably 15 pounds to Treylon Burks if you wanted to, knowing that he's just like built bigger.
Yeah. I don't think the question would be for any team like, if we take this guy, can we add 20 pounds, make him 310 and play him in a gap scheme? The question is, can he play at 290 and thrive in a gap scheme? Like, can he survive that power at 290 pounds? Like that, that's the question.
That's another important part of this evaluation process too, right, that I don't think gets discussed a ton in media coverage of the draft is like so much of this evaluation is not how big he is, but how big can he be, right? Like, and I think that's something that doesn't get discussed a ton in the draft process, whereas a Linderbaum probably can't get that much bigger, but go back to a player that, because he's gotten bigger, has been successful in the NFL, Max Crosby. Max Crosby at Eastern Michigan, I'll tell you what, they don't have the resources of an Iowa, and they weren't adding weight to him like what the Raiders could do. That first conversation between Mayock and Max Crosby was, we need you to add weight. And guess what? He's added a ton of weight, and he's now, you know, one of the more productive pass rushers on 1 year. We still need to see more of it, and he did it against bad offensive tackles. I know you're on that train, but I think Max Crosby is an example of a guy that added a ton of weight and got way better because of it.
And that feels like a thing that needs to be added to the evaluation, but only with like specific schools.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Last year when we were talking about Devontae Smith, it's like the dude was 160 pounds. Oh, but he'll get like,
no.
He's coming out of Alabama. You know, like they've been grinding on the protein shakes to try and get that guy above 160. If he hasn't got above 160 at Alabama, it's not happening.
Exactly.
That's what he's playing at.
It's also position by position and like what you want to do with that player, right? And there are a lot, you know, one of the number one questions I ask players in the interview process is, what weight did you play at? And what weight do you want to play at in the NFL? When you hear some volatility there, it's like, oh, I played at 240, but I want to play at 260. That is intriguing for NFL teams. If you can have that like level of range, but there are other players where what weight did you play at? It's like 168. What weight do you want to play at? Maybe like 171. Like that, if like you want to transform a player's body at the next level and you're hearing that kind of feedback, that's concerning.
We've also seen, you know, like when players just test horribly, a lot of times it's because they miscalculated.
Yes.
And it's like, let me put 20 pounds on and I'll test the same, and they don't. Or it is a game. I mean, it's legitimately a game. You get one weigh in and you want your weigh in. And it's that, like, that's like the number that is attached to you.
Yes.
Right. And you want your weigh in to tell a story. I'm well, heavy enough. I'm light enough. I'm whatever I am. Mm-hmm. But then you also need your workout to be maximized. So it is a game that they're playing right now as we head into the combine.
I'm going to go off on a little tangent here. Reel me in if you
I'm
need
ready.
To
we have
in.
All day. We
you,
spend
you need
all
to reel
day.
Me in, reel me in. The NFL, why it's done such a good job of marketing its product to be a year-round, 365-day thing, and why people, there's no single week in the year where the NFL is not relevant, free agency, the draft, the combine, all that stuff, is because they've gamified roster building. They've gamified it, right? Like, you know, I was hearing some discourse on, why do we know how much a player makes? Because that's part of the game. You know, knowing how much Patrick Mahomes makes, how much can I add in free agency? Oh, if I spend $10 million on Ryan Jensen, I can maybe add a guard. It's like they've gamified roster building in the NFL to a point where not just NFL teams have to play this game, but fans get to play this game. Fans get to do a mock draft simulator. Fans get to play theoretical free agency. And now they've done it to a point where the combine, I was talking to an agent, Mike McCartney, who is an agent for Priority Sports, has been doing this for 20 years.
Oh, yeah, the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys.
Not Mike McCarthy. Mike McCartney. But he did say, like, when the combine first started, the only reason they did it when the combine first started, I think it was in the 80s, was to get medical checks all at the same time. That's it.
That's
and then
still the biggest
the NFL said, like,
NFL.
Oh, like, while they're here, what if we interview them? What if the teams interview them? And then the NFL said, like, while they're here, what if we do some drills? And guess what? The NFL latches on to gamifying the combine, monetizing the combine, turning it into this spectacle for people to watch. And it's tip your cap. I mean, there are people with tattoos of, like, the Green Bay Packers on their back. Like, you talk about marketing. That is insane. Like,
those are Packers owners you're talking
about. Yeah, that's true. I'm just saying that the NFL has done a good job of marketing it.
They have. I think you might be giving them too much credit in terms of them driving that, though. I think that the reality of it is that a lot of people, the most interesting or captivating part of sports fandom is the hope attached to building.
Yes.
Building something better
than
you are now, right? Because ultimately, regardless of the sport you're talking about, there's only ever really a few teams that are realistically in with a chance of winning at the end of the year, right? In the NFL, it's playoff teams and then real contenders and everyone else. It's like, okay, next year, what are we getting? In soccer, right? Right now, it's Man City versus Liverpool. If you're not a fan of Man City or Liverpool, okay, you can chase for the top four. But outside of that, it's like, where are the players we can buy to get to where they are? So that's the thing that everyone's interested in. So as soon as you hit the end of the season, it's all right, where are my free agents? Where are my drafted guys? Because that's how we get better next year, to chase the thing that we're not in this year.
And the NFL, in my opinion, compared to other sports leagues, has done a better job of gamifying that hope and advertising that hope, in my opinion. Like, they've done a better job of that with the NFL draft and the accessibility to contract information and the accessibility to combine information. They've done a better job of billing that. Whereas, you know, think about baseball, for example, how baseball roster construction, and you are well-versed in this way more than me, but
you're adding to the count now.
The MLB draft is not not built for hope. You draft a guy in the 19th round at a high school, and you might not ever even see him play for the Dodgers.
Well, they're just not going right to the
exactly.
league.
Exactly. But that's not gamified. That's why not marketable.
NFL and NBA draft, you're drafting somebody that's going to be on the roster next year. Baseball, hockey, they're not. So, yeah, I mean, baseball's tried to market it. Like, oh, you got the top college player. But
and you don't know if he'll ever play for your team, right? Like, there are times where you draft
the
player.
But that's just like, there's nothing you can do about that. Like, the developmental
if you made them go to college, if you made baseball players go to college and you're drafting juniors and seniors and college baseball becomes more interesting and that whole thing gets gamified.
Yeah, but I
just
don't think the development arc is not going to allow those guys to step in and day one be like an impact playmaker to your team. Like, that's the thing with the NFL.
I don't know enough about baseball to, like, really comment, but yeah.
Well, as an expert myself, the top, you know, however many, 15 guys in the NFL are going to step in and they are automatically one of the best players on the roster of whatever team they step in. And, you know, the top 15 guys in any draft. So there's an inbuilt thing there that makes that so much more enticing than baseball, where they're not. Like, the idea that you can step in and immediately transform your team, particularly a quarterback. And the same thing is true with, like, soccer, you know, a big signing. A guy comes in, you spend $100 million on a player, that guy is going to come in and make your team a hell of a lot better, or he should, which is exciting.
You go ahead.
I want to finish your the question was about positional value at center, and this is I just want to bring people back down to earth during mock draft season right now. Imagine this was your non-quarterback mock draft last year. Micah Parsons was the most valuable non-QB as a rookie last year. Number two, Creed Humphrey, second round center out of the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, that was rare, but yeah, we're gonna be wrapping it up. Don't worry. Austin's trying to get out of here.
I'm not trying to get out of here. Jeez.
Listen, there's no behind the scenes talk here. We have full transparency here on the podcast. Right. Austin has a hard
I'm
out.
I'm talking we're being transparent.
We're wrapping it up.
At 12:30, I have a...
We'll send it to Tyler. He'll put it right on the screen.
At 12:30, I have a call with Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz to talk about some of the Iowa players, and then also Hutchinson.
Ask him about
Linderbaum's weight.
I will.
Forget the weight. Ask him about whether he's good enough to... Ask him that question. Is he good enough to ignore position value?
I will ask him.
Yeah. And then we can stitch it in. We'll ask right in there.
I'll ask him if Tyler Linderbaum stinks.
Creed Humphrey was the second most valuable non-QB as a rookie last year. But the other people that are in this mix, Nate Hobbs, the corner out of, you know, from the Raiders, Jamar Chase, Javon Holland, Trayvon Merrick, Kyle Pitts. Okay, yeah, he's top five. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Rashawn Slater, first round. Devontae Smith, first round. Eric Stokes, Jalen Waddle, Penesulis. You got a bunch of first rounders, but you have, you know, random second rounders and low rounded. Nick Bolton's a top 16 player. Right? Imagine if this was your mock draft. So, but when people say that's your worst mock draft ever, just realize we're all going to be about half right when it comes to this.
And this one will be more volatile, I think. I think the forecasters will be wrong a lot in this mock draft, just because there's the only position where I think there is a consensus top player is safety and center. I don't think there's any other position groups. Like, even tight end, I thought Trey McBride would be the consensus tight end one, but Lance Zierlein has Kate Otten as number one tight end in this class. So I do think it's going to be a very volatile mock draft season.
Not an exciting tight end class. We're not going to talk running backs. That's a rule. Last thing. Usually in a draft, there's like a pivot point, right? Where there's six great players, and then there's a pivot, right? Is there even a pivot point in this draft? Where is the pivot point? Or will we know, we'll start to get more of a consensus as we get closer to April, but is there even a pivot point here, or is it at one because we just don't know what's going to happen already?
I think there's somewhat of a pivot point. I think it's after the two big name edge guys and the three big name offensive tackles go, and then you could include your favorite receiver and two or three of the top cornerbacks, and then I think it's over. I think then you're kind of picking your favorite flavor and less so like committed to any, you know, this is my 15th best player, and there's no way I'm taking, you know, the 16th player on my board over him. I do think that the three offensive tackles, Ekwonu of NC State, Charles Cross of Mississippi State, and Evan Neal of Alabama, and then the two edge guys, Aiden Hutchinson of Michigan, Kayvon Thibodeau of Oregon, corners, Stingley of LSU, Gardner, Cincinnati, McDuffie of Washington, maybe not even include him in because not a lot of people like him. You include just the two corners there, and I think after that, it just becomes, you know, there's a lot of range, right? Cross could go 6 to 22. McDuffie could go 8 to 21. I think there's a lot of range on where these other guys go.
Anybody at the combine next year? I said last question, but who's gonna make the biggest move after next week? You mentioned Hutchinson.
Biggest move, that's interesting.
Put you in the spot.
Maybe a riser will be Penning. I think Penning will have a really good combine, and people will buy into his athletic testing. Right now, he's not considered among the big three for offensive tackles, Aquanu, Neal, and
Well, he needs to stop throwing pass rushers into quarterbacks.
True. The penalties are a concern. The penalties are a concern. But again, you're forgetting this is the NFL.
NFL teams love that.
Yeah, NFL teams love that.
They're not going to love it once he wrecks his own quarterback's ACL.
Yeah, don't finish him into the quarterback.
NFL teams love that, and I think also NFL teams love the combine, man. Like, this athletic testing is such a big percentage of people's viewpoint on this draft. I think he's a guy that could move significantly up people's boards. I think another name as well will be kind of a Malik Willis potentially solidifying himself as a QB1 for a lot of
run?
People. I think he might. Because there are That'd some concerns great. That is he a Jalen Hurts-level runner or is he a Lamar Jackson-level runner, right? Like, is he build your entire offense around his rushing ability or know that it's a component of your offense?
There is a difference,
if he has, like, low 4.5 type of speed at 6'2", 220, there will be teams like, oh, man, I could turn him into this run-first quarterback that's not as good as Lamar Jackson, but maybe at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's got the high ceiling, but that creates a high-floor offense when you can build your run
exactly.
game around him. Sam, do you have anything else?
No, I think it's been good.
You're good?
Mm-hmm.
No more investigation. Now Austin gets to be the one being interviewed.
I changed the person on YouTube. He hated me initially, but we found
Drew's
some
already
ground.
A friend of the show, right? He sends his emails all the time.
But does he really?
Why do you hate you?
Why'd you get him all mad?
I didn't mean to get him mad.
What did you do to him?
We found common ground. Me and Drew have found
common
ground.
Does Drew watch Tailgate?
Probably not.
Not anymore.
Definitely not now.
If you guys watch Tailgate, drop it in the chat. And if you don't, you should go check it out.
Hell yeah.
Even if you sat out one episode, go check out Tailgate. Austin and Mike Renner, they do a great job. Anything else you got here while you're on the big show, Austin?
Check out Tailgate. Check out the Hutchinson podcast that comes out in April 22. And also follow along as we go to the Combine, right? Excited to go to the Combine. Excited to cover that event. I think it's been a while. Haven't been there in a long time. Pre-COVID's the last time we've made the trip to the Combine. So I'm excited to go meet the people there and talk to those players. It should be good.
I'll be there too, despite the tweet that did not announce me. I'm behind closed doors. Team meetings wall to wall Tuesday through Thursday.
Doing the valuable
with
stuff.
All the execs. Because PFF IQ. We're just talking PFF IQ over
a lot of haters replying to that tweet. Have you seen the replies?
Which tweet?
The tweet announcing.
You guys
I mean, PFF is chock full of haters. I think Drew Forsythe. I turned a hater into a promoter today.
I've muted or blocked a lot of my haters. So there's a whole new group of them that are hitting the
I wear my haters to the sleeve. I try and convert haters into common ground like I have with Drew Forsythe.
Anyway, thanks to everybody for tuning in. Go check out Austin and Tailgate. And we'll be back Monday. Getting back to our Fixing Every Team in 5 Minutes series.
Ooh.
And then more great content coming from the Combine next week and all sorts of goodies as we go here. PFF NFL Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.